This is April 12th, 1993. My name is Jennifer Hinbest, and this is an interview. This interview is part of the Kodiak Oral History Project, directed by Dr. Gary Stevens, which will be included in the University of Alaska's Oral History Archives in Fairbanks. And I'm conducting an interview with Grace Herod, a resident artist and basket weaver of the of Kodiak, Alaska.
If you ask me a question, then I won't have to get lost.
Okay. Okay, Grace. Well, tell us a bit about your family and your years growing up in Nuuvik.
At Nuuvik Island?
Nuuvik Island, yeah.
Actually, I was born in a little sod house in a lot of white people think we live in igloo. Actually, the first time I ever seen igloo was I was about in seventh grade, and our school teacher came from Seattle, Washington, and his name was Mr. Gibson. And he was a real good teacher. And we were reading about these Eskimos living in igloo, and we said, we don't know what igloo looks like. So on recess time, he taught us how to build us an igloo. I was about 13 or 14, first time I ever seen an igloo. So, you don't live in igloos. He was a white man, taught us how to build an igloo. And Dad used to have a lot of dog team, and he was a great hunter, and he was a great provider, and we were never hungry. We used to travel to seal camp about this time of year in April from Kodiak to the south side of the island, and where Dad grew up. And Dad used to hunt a lot of seals, and springtime we'd clean them up, and he'd take the seal blubbers and dried meat and take them to Kuskokwim Arum trade, you know, barter.
Mm-hmm.
And once in a while he'd take us kids with us and Mom.
Did you like to go?
Oh yeah, I love it. It's something, you know, to me Bethel was a big city like
right.
Anchorage. It was a small place. Maybe 3-4 stores. But to me it was a big city, you know.
Well, Nuuvik, though, when you were growing up, was real small, or like about how many people lived in
there? There was quite a few people. There was over 400, close to 500. But when it started to become teenager, when I was 16 or 17, you see things differently. You know. Here I was caught between two cultures. And you either have choice of staying home, get married to a person that's appointed to by your father, or you could go against him and go educate yourself.
So, well, but at that time it was like an arranged marriage?
My cousins, they got arranged and got married. I said, no way.
No.
What my dad said, and I'm his oldest daughter, and my mother died when I was just a little girl, when I was 3 years old, so I was his girl. So he said, what do you want? I said, I want to educate. Go to high school. I've heard of this high school. You can become whatever you want to be. Be school teacher, whatever, nurse or whatever. And he was real sick with tuberculosis at the time. Epidemic, you know, early 50s. And we could go into seal camp and go back to, he used to barter all that seal oil and get all these furs and parka squirrels and wolf wolverine cowhide cloth, and he gets a lot of cloth from my mom's kasbah. In a little cannery booth for us kids, and Lots of crackers, Sailor Boy crackers, and lots of flour and sugar and coffee. A lot of good food, candy, oranges, and which you don't see at Southside or the island when I was growing. So it was just like a big ship just come in when we go to Bethel, come home.
And so you take the boat over to Bethel?
Yeah, Dad had a little boat, about 35-foot boat. We used that as transportation at summertime. But at wintertime, we used dog teams.
At wintertime, what?
Dog team for transportation. Uh-huh. And Dad had one of the best. Dad had the best almost of everything.
Oh. Oh, that's
and after Dad got remarried, they ended up having about 10 boys, I think, and my little sister, Lola, she was born my mom, my present mother. She had her tubes tied, so she's the only girl they got out of 10 boys, I think.
Wow.
So there's about 14 of us altogether. One passed away 3 years ago, the snowmobile accident. So my present mother had boy and a girl when Dad remarried her, so we're a big family, one of the biggest on the island. But I don't remember being hungry till I left on my own in Anchorage, and I noticed I was hungry. I couldn't find work for a whole month, and I finally landed a job at the Ennis Hospital as a nurse's aide.
Well, let me ask you this. You were in, you went, when did you leave the island?
1954.
54, and then you went to?
I went to Mount Edgecombe. To boarding school.
Okay.
Our Sitka. My first plane ride, it was terrible. First of all, I was scared to get on the plane, and when we got on the plane, our pilot got lost going from McCormick to Bethel.
Was it a small plane?
And one of them old Cessnas, they hauled about eight of us passengers in that plane. And we got stuck in one of my cousins, he got sick. He got air sick, and he just puked all over our sleeping bags. We spent night just smelling that puke, and we got, I'd never want to see a little plane. Gosh, it was sick. Oh, our clothes stunk. My first plane ride, terrible. Then when we got Anchorage, it was more scary. All these cars, and it was real scary. And
I know it was a real big city. I mean, it's like a very big city.
Yeah, then they put us in Salvation Army, and there was a bunch of other girls, big girls, that were headed there, and they're in their junior seniors from Unicleet. The one girl I met, she was her first year away from home, too. I remember Ruth Nanick. She had braids, and I had braids, too, and we had something in common. She had blue eyes, but she was blonde, but she had braids, and we became best of friends. And then I really fell out of place. I know I had TB because I was spitting blood, and after about 11 days I couldn't take it no more, so I told my matron. I landed in the hospital, and I was in hospital for almost a year and a half.
And this was right before you went to high school? Or?
Yeah, while I was in high school, I told my I was real sick. I was spitting blood and everything. So I was in hospital for about a year and a half, and they cut my lung and took some out. And then I went home. Dad was very religious person. When I got home, I was about 19 from boarding school, and both Dad and Mom were at the hospital, Alaska Native Hospital in Anchorage, and they got home too. By the time we got, my brother and I got home, my older brother. So he said I was learning too much sin, so he took me up to Nome, and I wanted to go to school. Because I was doing so good down in Montage when I was a B student, you know, unroll student. And he took me away from my boyfriend, and We went up to Nome by our little boat again to see Grandpa and Grandma. We had a real hard time up there. And I learned how to drink while I was still in high school. That was a mistake. Mm-hmm. And from there on, I drink every weekend after that. Even I was in senior year, I was alcoholic already.
Oh gosh.
So even I got job at the Anchorage after I got finished high school, 59 from Nome.
So you finished, when you went up to Nome, you just finished high school there?
Yeah, I finished school up there. When I got to Anchorage, I really was drinking real heavily. And I just quit my job as a nurse. And I forgot what I did. And I got married when I was 24, and I got working as a nurse's aide again with my first kid. And I got married. And I had two more kids. So I started drinking real heavily after about 4 years, found out he was on dope, you know. I started drinking real heavily again. That's when we broke up. Mm-hmm. And I drank so much, I kept landing in, even though I got married, keep on landing in jail, you know. And my sister-in-law put my kids to foster home, my three kids, boy and a girl, Mina, two girls and two boys and one girl. And I got them back for about 6 months. Then I went back to, we went home, they were in foster home for about, gosh, maybe a year or a couple of years. I sobered up and I got a job back home at Victoria as a cook for Head Start. And everybody went to fish camp without me and my three kids, and everybody was drinking at 4th of July, and my landlord told me to get out of the house. I packed my kids and went to Anchorage. Sold everything, and I started back drinking again, and I told the lady that took care of them before, I said, come and pick up my kids. I never got them back, so I started drinking, you know, kept on drinking. And she adopted them. About 20 years ago, Native land claims came up. I got a little bit of money, round trip ticket to come to Kodiak. It was only $80. I said, this is better than Fourth Avenue. I'm just going to see how Kodiak is.
So you were living in Anchorage at the time.
Yeah.
And all that came up. That would be like 1971 or?
I don't know. Something like that.
Early 70s, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you got a ticket to Kodiak.
I bought a round trip ticket. It was also $80. So I came to Kodiak. I met Jim at one of the bars, and he said I could stay with him as long as I want. I've been here ever since. I'm married to him. He's the one that really encouraged me to find that I was real artistic. Mm-hmm. I said for my grass from Anchorage, and I would let him see me work.
You would or wouldn't?
I wouldn't. Oh. I would not let him see me work. I said he was going to make fun of me.
Uh-huh.
So I was real self-conscious because he's white man. I'm Native. Because I'm used to being make fun of. I think it's, you're very conscious, especially if you're Native, like other people in Anchorage. They used to make fun of you, especially if you're Native. So I thought he was going to be that way to me, too. Mm-hmm. So he'll be gone all day working, and when he's ready to come home, I just hide my work away. But I just show him what I'd done that day. That's beautiful. Then finally...
So he was real encouraging, in other words.
Then he started praising me. Then first I was kind of bashful to work in front of him. Then he said, I don't know how you do it. You watch me. Now then he started encouraging, like, my first, this big basket here, he said, put in the state fair, they have that state fair thing out at Belle Flats. Nah, it's just a big old basket. And, no, put it in. So he let me put it in, and I went two ribbons.
See, sometimes that's all you need is a little encouragement. Wow.
Kodak State Fair.
That's great.
1983. Mm-hmm. Yes. I was still drinking.
Well, so was this one of your first,
one of my very first drinks, even
pieces that you actually put in a show, right?
Yeah. So I used to try to sell it in the bars. He finally got sick and tired of me. And he said, I wish you could give that to me when I'm sobered up. I said, are you serious? I said, he said, I'm serious. Give it to me so you won't have to sell. Okay, it's yours. So every time I'm ready to go to town on my show, I'll say, could I borrow your basket? And he said, so it's his now. I cannot use it unless I ask.
Uh-huh.
This is asking. So I made myself. Sort of got
rich. Well, you know, back to what you were saying before about being native and people, like, you didn't want to do your artwork because you felt like people were going to make fun of you.
Yeah.
That started, like, when you were a kid. You were saying before about feeling like you had to speak. You know, you were reprimanded for speaking native language, or?
I don't know. I think, I don't know how it starts, but he's a white man, you know? He's not my same nationality. And you're very aware of it, that he's not from the same race.
Right.
And I thought he was going to make fun of me, but he didn't.
He was really encouraging.
He still encourages me, and he's my great supporter. He goes, when he was working, he'll come home, this guy wants a basket. I said, Jimmy, you and your big mouth. But I get a lot of orders from him, you know, when he was working. But he helped me a lot. And he used to say, when I was drinking, you're so talented, and I wish you could quit. And I quit 4 years ago and 4 months. And the door really has opened up for me, and I used to go to Joe Kelly and sell him my little baskets. And when I sobered up, he really got to know me. We started talking about God, and we find that we got same interests, and he really got to know me. Then he asked me, would you be interested in sewing a kayak? I said, I gotta think about that. He said, seriously. So for several months I thought about it, and he called me one day.
Well, he had seen your baskets and thought you could sew a kayak, or?
Yeah, he asked me if I know how to do a waterproof seams, and he used to ask me a lot of questions that I take for granted, and he'd see me, my work, and we sit there and talk for half an hour maybe when I saw my baskets, and that's when he first got to know him. Pretty soon we started talking about our kayak, and he put me to work. We worked together, mm-hmm. Joe Kelly and I, and Bud Rosa, another girl. Her name is Charlotte Kiplinger. She lives here in Kodak. She's native. Anyway, that's our first kayak up there.
Oh, this one in the corner here?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, someone would make the wooden interior part, and then you would sew the skin.
But Roselle made the frame. Then he'll cut the skins for me. Then also I'll sew the skins together. There are They're not seal skins. They're made of white deer hide, Sitka white deer hide. There are about 10 or 12 of them make about how many kayaks.
This is the first one here, and this is the...
I think it's the first, and I think that's the third one.
Real beautiful. Is this
the first one up there went to Japan. It went to the museum.
Oh,
that's
wow.
What my dad told me, it will sink, and I said it's going to be a museum, and he said you're safe.
It went all the way to Japan. Oh, that's neat.
And the second went to Munich, Germany.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. And the third one can about it. I believe that's the one down there on the spot. So from my father, he works for vocational rehab.
Uh-huh.
He's really been helpful too. Gives me that go and I go.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the go sign. Yeah, encourages me.
Well, do you teach through CANA or?
Yeah.
So what kind of, how's the class set up? Is it basket weaving or skin and so on?
The kayak was under vocational rehab under supervision of Joe Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And Joe Kelly's, thanks for that, vocational rehab. And people that can't find work or have a hard time, and he helps them. And if they're good with their hands, he'll put them through work if it'll work with their hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like he knows I'm good with baskets, so he asked me if I could work with Joey. He's retarded. He's disabled mentally, and I taught him. November.
Since November?
October, November, I believe. And we just quit about a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And he's been selling his baskets.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's neat. So that's a real accomplishment, really.
He's my very first student.
Wow, the first time that you taught basket weaving is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you've been taught, you learned basket weaving from your mother or your
mm-hmm.
and your family.
Yeah. My mother, they don't teach you. You try. You are never forced to work when you're growing up. If you don't want to cut fish, you don't have. You are never forced to. You do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you will hate to do it because you're forced to. Your mother's working real hard, she's cutting fish. All you do is cut fish, two fish, practicing it, and she'll praise you. And if it's good, she'll praise you. Even though it's bad, she'll praise you. And you want to cut more fish. And you get tired of it, you put down your willow down and just play on the beach and help a little bit. You're never forced to work when you're small. You were just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with making any kind of native arts and crafts, like making clothes and like making baskets. She never asked me to make baskets. I did it on my own.
Right. It's like you wanted to be included in that.
I wouldn't be included. I wouldn't be a star growing up, I think. That's the feeling you said. I want to be like my mother. She makes it good. I want to do it like her.
Right.
So then you try. First she'll supervise you a little bit. Then she'll tell you make it tighter or whatever. And pretty soon you get tired. You just put it down and forget it for several days, months. And you try it again.
Now, did your mother, when she was making baskets, did she make them to use for around the house? Or
no.
It was more of art.
She used that to sell to make income. Like one time she made about 12 disc like mats. She was selling for $1 each when I was growing up. No, they sell them for over $100.
Yeah. And what about the, she also sort of taught you, or you learned the beadwork, and you're showing me those boots.
Well, I know how to do that, but I'm not enthused about it, so I don't do it.
Right.
I done a couple of barrettes, and I'm not real enthused about it. But making earrings and bracelets, I love it.
Uh-huh.
It's my favorite pastime.
With beads, right?
With beads.
Yeah.
I show my bead work.
I always care for them.
People always ask me if I have any beads to keep.
Beautiful.
Necklace.
I think I saw these for sale at Comfish, right?
Yeah, here. They were my favorite sellers. So I made a whole bunch when I got home.
Oh, these are beautiful.
They're for sale. Some of these, some of that were not sold.
Why not? As artists, you have to have everything for sale.
Yeah, here's my new creation, my little basket earrings.
Oh. Beautiful. Is this your own made-up design?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You create your own imagination. Whatever comes to your mind, if it'll work or not. I think the reason why they didn't sell is because they didn't have no hooks. They're little post ones, you know.
Oh, yeah. People feel like the back gets lost easier. I think these flower necklaces are gorgeous. This looks like a lot of times put in these.
Yeah, that'll take all day, almost.
And also with the baskets, too, as far as time goes, it's a lot of a lot of time in those.
Just the top right here, it'll take about an hour and a half to do.
Mm-hmm, just for like the knob on the top, right?
The reason why this one is so big, I was thinking of my mom's. Ask how big the coil is, and I was thinking about it when she'll do it real fast, I'll do it this way. That's one of my very first baskets, that's why it's such a big coil. I was thinking of my mom at the time when I was making it.
I like this. This has almost like a tulip on the side, right?
Uh-huh. Flower. And I done that. And after I sobered up, I went home for fish camp. I went home to help cut the fish summertime. Mom gave me a Squirrel Park Ashram.
Okay. And fish camp is what exactly? I mean, when you say
it's
camp.
It's just like here. You travel by boat. Uh-huh. You travel by boat all day long for several hours. Then you go to fish camp. You pitch up a tent close to where the fish are coming up from the ocean. And you have fish racks. And you stay there for couple weeks to a month or more till the fish is dry. You can take it home half dry.
And it's a lot of work, but it's fun too, because everyone's coming from your family and different places.
The whole family works together. It's just like kind of vacation life. It's really fun. I grew up like that. And it's a lot of fun to be a fish camp. Lots of mosquitoes, but when I was growing up, I hate shoes and mucklucks, you know. You never see me in shoes. So. I was bare feet all summer. Now if I'm bare feet, just even go out to the porch. Ow!